This is Chef John Foles welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, and inviting you to join us at the kitchen table for another hour of adventures in food. Each week, we travel from the back roads of Louisiana to the streets of Europe's capitals, delving into food. We talk with chefs, food historians, authors, and producers. We search out current trends, revive forgotten traditions, and believe me, we're going to cook for you. It's fig season, y'all. Sweet and juicy Celeste, brown turkey, Alma, LSU, purple and gold. They're all getting ripe now. It's a short but sweet season, so get your fig on. Join me, Chef John Foles, and Dalton Durio of Durio Nursery as we talk about figs on Stirring It Up next. But first, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. International observers say they're still getting only limited access to the Malaysia Airlines crash site in eastern Ukraine. NPR's Corey Flintoff reports the observers say the site is poorly secured by pro-Russian rebels who control the area.
Michael Bachorku, a spokesman for the observer mission from the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, says rebels kept the group from moving freely at the crash site.
We didn't feel any harassment this time as we did yesterday, but it was somewhat of an intimidating environment nonetheless.
Bachorku said the observers also had the impression that some of the debris at the site had been moved. The observers are concerned that if wreckage is disturbed or tampered with, important evidence about the crash may be lost. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Donetsk.
Meanwhile, Secretary of State John Kerry is calling on Russian officials to allow investigators full access to the site, saying the U.S. is very concerned about reports victims' remains have been moved or tampered with. British Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond echoed the sentiment.
This is not about Russia and the West. It's about the entire international community demanding that the proper access to this site is made available, that the victims' bodies are properly recovered, and that the evidence is secured.
The plane was flying from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur with 298 people on board from 13 nations. More protests in Europe today against the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. From London, Fiona Zublin reports thousands wound through central London demonstrating against Israel's incursion into Gaza.
The march began at Downing Street and ended at the Israeli embassy. Several speakers, including at least one member of parliament, gave speeches calling for an end to Israel's military action in Gaza as supporters stood in 84-degree heat. Yesterday, protesters demonstrated outside the cabinet office, locking themselves to railings and demanding to speak to officials. The prime minister's office issued a statement saying Prime Minister David Cameron joins President Obama in supporting Israel's right to, quote, defend itself. For NPR News, I'm Fiona Zublin in London.
At least 27 people are dead in a series of bombings in Iraq today. That includes three bombs in 10 minutes. The attacks in Baghdad are among the most significant since insurgents led by the Islamic State, a Sunni extremist group, captured the country's second biggest city of Mosul last month. Today's deadliest bombing took place in a Shiite neighborhood. Officials say several police are amongst the dead. Colorado's high court has ordered Denver's clerk to stop issuing same-sex marriage licenses. It's a response to an appeal from Attorney General John Southers. He's asking the state's Supreme Court to rule on the constitutionality of the gay marriage ban. And in Utah, more than 1,000 married same-sex couples have to wait for state benefits after the U.S. Supreme Court Friday granted the state a stay on an order requiring it to recognize those marriages. This is NPR. Wind gusts up to 30 miles an hour are pushing into a huge wildfire in north-central Washington state in new directions, causing road closures and evacuations to change rapidly. Officials say the fire has now burned at least 330 square miles in Methow Valley and is moving to a cluster of small towns about 200 miles northeast of Seattle. The fire has destroyed around 100 houses in Pateros. More migrants from the Middle East and Africa died on board a smuggler's boat, taking them to Italy. NPR's Silvia Pajoli reports Italy has rescued more than 4,000 migrants in the last 3 days.
The Italian Coast Guard said 18 men aboard a boat carrying 400 migrants have died. Carbon monoxide fumes from the boat's engine were cited as the probable cause of death. Italy has rescued more than 70,000 so far this year, compared to just over 60,000 in all of 2011, the year of the Arab Spring uprisings. The Italian Navy has been patrolling its southern waters since October when 366 migrants died in a boat that capsized off Lampedusa. Rome is asking for EU assistance to help cover the $12 million the operation costs each month. It's called Mare Nostrum, RC, which is what the ancient Romans called the Mediterranean. Silvia Poggioli, NPR News, Rome.
Jazz musician Lionel Ferbus playing the song Sister Kate. He died at his home in New Orleans today, days after celebrating his birthday. He played all over New Orleans for decades, and he played at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festivals until this past year. He was believed to be the oldest working jazz musician. Lionel Ferbus was 103. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from Cigna, a global health service company dedicated to helping people improve their health, well-being, and sense of security at Cigna.com.
Hey y'all, Chef John Falls welcoming you to Starring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, and thank you for joining us at the kitchen table as I'm pouring cream right now on top of these luscious, luscious fruit, Michelle, I just brought into the studio. Don't even talk about it now. I'm going to share some with you.
Oh, good. Well, then we don't need to talk about it if you're going to share.
I'm going to share some with you. Just keep your hands off of those big ones on the end right there. Those that turn that box around. In fact, so they face me, huh? Anyway, y'all, it's so nice to have all of you with us. Michelle, what's going on? Like, they're kind of hot out there, huh?
It's hot as blazes out there.
And y'all have to tell you, I'm just going to come out right now. I need some relief right now because Michelle has got me running all over the state of Louisiana. My schedule is in turmoil. I need to file a complaint against her.
And speaking of complaints, I was going to file the same complaint, actually. We must be two peas in a pod.
I think so. Anyway, y'all, we're filming our new PBS series right now. We're doing our fishing show, 13 and a half hours.
13 and a half hours. So we've been up and down the coastline. We've been oyster fishing and catfishing and to a tilapia farm and saltwater fishing and shrimping. I mean, it's been fantastic. But I have to tell you, I'm not sure. I think I'm dehydrated. And I'm definitely sunburned. Look at this.
Well, I tell you what, I am slime. I'm abused.
Yeah.
I'm abused. I tell you what.
He is abused.
I'm abused. She's got me getting in front of the camera.
I drive. I write the scripts. I get the water. I make sure he's comfortable. You are an abused man.
But I am the talent. I fall under the role of talent. Michelle does all the work. I'm the talent.
It ain't flowers. Ain't all pretty.
Yeah. It reminds me of the little wind-up bear I used to have. The bear just sat till somebody wound it up. Anyway, thank you for the great work, Miss York.
Well, thank you for the great talent.
No, you're doing a great job. I appreciate it. What's going on, Slama?
Oh, man.
What's going on in your world?
Just tuning into that TV. I'm waiting for them episodes to come on out.
I tell you, they're good, though. They're going to be good.
Oh, yeah. The guys are doing a fabulous job.
We had a beautiful family a few weeks ago. We had this magnificent family, 10 children, mother and a father in Scott, Louisiana, who has this huge farm, and they work in aquaculture. They have catfish and they have tilapia that they raise there, but it was more about the family farm that was just incredible. So that's the good news.
The kids were so articulate. We're actually going to have them come out when we're shooting at White Oak just in a couple of weeks. But also, they raise poultry. So they have 400 chickens, and in the next few weeks, they're going to be getting 400 turkeys. So we'll be celebrating Thanksgiving with them for sure.
We're going to have that family here for the big show, and they're going to bring us a turkey.
I'm not sure we can all fit in here.
No, anyway, they were great
Scott,
family.
Louisiana.
Scott, Louisiana, absolutely. Scott.
Gautreaux. It was Gautreaux Family Farms.
Gautreaux Family Farms.
Brian and Dawn.
Oh, Brian and Don, you talk about it. Anyway, anybody near Scott, anybody near Lafayette, anybody in Baton Rouge, New Orleans, driving that way, Scott, Louisiana.
Scott.
Gautreaux, G-O, by the way.
That's G-O.
Anyway, Michelle, you see what I have here in front of me? I brought in something nice and cool for you today, some delicious fresh figs from the White Oak Orchard.
I see that. I was wondering when I would have an opportunity to see these. You know, I've been counting the days and was hoping my share didn't go to the birds. Well, I noticed you didn't mention my fig trees. You'll be happy to know that I netted my fig trees a few weeks ago.
Yeah, Michelle had figs on her trees before I did, and I've got 9 horticulturists, and she doesn't even know where the fig trees are. She has like a GPS hook to go find a fig tree.
Whoa.
And her fig trees are full. That's what aggravates me. The more love you give a tree, the more they fight back.
I didn't even know I had ripe figs on my tree until the birds told me. That's why I had to get the nets. But these are beautiful figs.
Well, no. Well, these are some of my Celeste. I mean, they're the queen fig of Louisiana. I think even though I grow beautiful brown turkey and LSU gold and tiger stripe and all that, Celeste is probably the most planted fig tree in Louisiana because it's cold hardy. It's dependable. The figs are a small to medium size. They're really great and sweet. And what I love about the Celeste, you can eat them right off of the tree. But I'm going to beat the birds this year. I promise you. I got the birds whipped. I tell
you,
those birds are probably sitting in the tree says he thinks he's got a whip. But anyway, I got a new system around my trees this year that's really netted in a good way, and I think I might have something. I'll let you know.
Well, you know, and the squirrels eat them, too.
No.
The squirrels eat figs. I caught one in my tree the other day.
Yeah. Well, and then I found out also, like, the help around White Oak eats figs. You know? Like,
squirrels
like,
and the help.
Not only do I lose 2 hours of work time for 40 people, I'll lose figs in the process. I tell you, my life's in shambles.
Oh, you are just being abused up one side, down the other.
Well, anyway, getting back to the Celeste, they're fabulous for preserving. You know, they're really good. You can't cook them too long. They tend to want to fall apart, but if you cook them in sugar like your mom does, man, your mother does a magnificent fig.
She does. And, you know, I have to say that these figs that we have right here today, they're my favorite kind. Someone else picked them, and all I have to do is eat them. So they are my absolute favorite kind of fig.
She's got pork chops and roast that fall under the same category. Mm-hmm. Somebody else cooks them, she eats them.
Put a little figs on there, and they're really delicious.
Oh, man, you talk about.
You know, I'm remembering the show we did on olives not too long ago, and the olive and the fig actually have so much in common. They can both trace their origins back to the earliest of times, with mentions in the Bible and other ancient writings, and are considered symbols of peace and prosperity. Many scholars believe that the forbidden fruit that Adam and Eve ate in the Garden of Eden was not actually an apple, but a fig. And it makes sense if you think about it. If you read the whole text there, they are depicted wearing fig leaves.
Yeah, but somebody had to paint that. I mean, that wasn't like they had a Polaroid shot of it.
No, but it's written. Fig leaves, it's written in the Bible.
Oh, okay, well, I'll believe it now then.
You thought I made that up?
Well, I just thought you were going off the picture.
No, I'm not going off the picture. I'm going off the page.
See, well, I just want to clear that up for the listener here. I keep the standards high on this show.
Truth and honesty and telling the exact right story on there. You're not going to exaggerate
that. And the American way. That's right.
One of the earliest recorded fruits eaten in the Middle East was the fig, and remnants have even been found in archaeological excavations, dating as far back as the Neolithic era.
Oh, and I tell you.
I wouldn't want to eat a Neolithic fig, but it's nice to know they have them. But it is.
It's interesting that you mentioned all the biblical texts about figs, because there's a lot of food mentioned in the Bible, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, garlic. Is that? Anyway, the fig, it is native to the area between the Mediterranean and the Black Sea, same as the olive, as you mentioned. And because it grows so easily from season cutting, it was most likely introduced to other parts of that region by people traveling throughout the Holy Land. They were probably first cultivated, many think, in Egypt about 5,000 years ago, and then spread north to ancient Crete, and then all I guess around the 9th century made their way to Greece, and then The rest was history. Greeks love figs. They took them everywhere.
They took them everywhere. But, you know, the fig was treasured as much as the olive by the Christians, the Jews, and the Muslims alike. The Greeks even created laws forbidding the export of the best quality figs.
After it was exported to them.
Yeah. That does not matter. That's a technicality.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me, though, if John doesn't put some kind of regulation in that figs from White Oak cannot be exported like to Gonzales.
Like to Gonzales,
that
to your
sense,
house.
Yeah.
Can't be exported to Donaldsonville.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were a staple foodstuff in ancient diets, dried or fresh. And, you know, have you seen those dried figs on strings? You see them in the open markets? The Kalamata figs. In ancient times, people carried these on long journeys because they were non-perishable.
I think it's the same ones, too. I mean, they look...
Stop.
I think they came out archaeologically.
Well, obviously, there were no falses on that trip. Otherwise, there would be none. But they were high in protein and carbohydrates, great for long trips. The trees would provide several crops a year, and they were relied on for other uses, too. The tree bark was used for wood, and those giant leaves... Not only for clothing, like Adam and Eve, but they provided shade from the hot Mediterranean sun, sort of like the leaves on a sycamore tree.
Boy, and I love those dried figs from that region, too. You kind of put them in your mouth, and it takes a while to chew them. Kind of like bubble gum, but boy, when you get into them, Anyway, one particular reference in the Bible, Michelle, you and I talked about, mentions Zacharias. Remember when he climbed to the top of the sycamore tree to get a sight of Jesus? This was probably a fig tree.
Now, are you getting that from the photo?
I'm getting that from a lecture with Jeff Cavins over when we were in Israel. He said that Zechariah was up there looking down on a fig tree, and I believe it.
You know, I was on that trip, and somehow I don't recall that lecture.
That.
Yeah, but also I also was videoing you across the
You got me
of
with the
synagogue, and you was daydreaming. So that's
I was not daydreaming. I was listening, taking notes.
Well, anyway, they think it was probably a fig tree, and thank heaven for the fig leaves on all the marble statues that the Greeks put up for the Olympiads. You know,
strategically placed.
Yeah, that's right.
Fig
I'm happy they weren't talking about olives. There'd be a lot showing. You know what I mean?
You're bad. Well, moving on. The fig tree was discovered in the New World in the 16th century in the Aztec and Mayan tropical rainforests of Central America as the strangler fig. Now, think about this.
Huh.
Very eerie, very interesting tree, kind of like something out of a sci-fi movie. Root tendrils climb up out of the ground, wrap themselves around the trunk of the host tree and anything else in its path. The indigenous people would pound the bark into a papyrus-type paper. Spanish explorers brought the fig to Florida around the same time, and cuttings ready for propagation were brought to Virginia from Europe in about 1787 by none other than our famous founding foodie, Thomas Jefferson.
All right, Michelle, you've given us some really great, great history on the fig. I still want to tell you about the Mission Olive. There was the Mission Fig. There was the Black Mission. We want to talk about
Sarah.
That's exactly right. We want to talk about him planting the first fig trees and all of that. But we have to take a quick break. And when we come back, a lot more about figs, great recipes, and an authority on the subject.
Yes.
Other than us, of course.
Thank goodness.
See you here in a minute.
Started to drive, finding nothing but warmth at Victory Bay. There's no time, who needs time? Stop the clock at 9:30.
For the finest in classic ska, rock steady, rockers, DJ, dance hall, and dub, it's Jamon. Cecil here, bringing you Southwest Louisiana's longest running reggae tradition, Jamon. JAM on Sunday nights from 9 to 11 p.m. or Saturday mornings from 1 to 3 a.m. and streaming live anytime at krvs.org.
Greetings. I'm Jake Hebert.
And I'm Adam Chouard. Join us every Friday at midnight for the Sound Club radio program.
Your home for left field pop gems from today to yesteryear.
Here on 88.7 FM, KRVS.
Hi, I'm Pete Bergeron. If your day starts early, like mine does, let's spend it together with Cajun music from 5 to 7 a.m. here at Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio, Michelle. Culture show on radio. Mm-hmm. Y'all, before we took the break, we were talking about some of the history of figs and the Spanish explorers, etc. And just like the Mission Olive, of course, that was the Mission Fig, and we were talking about the Black Mission Fig. I guess they refer to it as Franciscana because it was from that Franciscan missionary, your favorite Franciscan
that's
missionary.
That's it, Father Junipero Serra.
Yeah, you love him.
Junipero. I like saying Junipero.
Yeah, that's fun. And we went chase down all of his missions in California.
Well, we haven't chased down all of them.
Well, not all of them.
But I did Carmel, and then we went to the one.
With the big grape, the original grapevine brought by him, by Father Serra to.
I don't remember the grapevine because I was all excited about
Capistrano.
Oh, you're talking about the one in L.A.
Michelle, that Capistrano thing is all fiction.
I saw the swallows.
Yeah, but you wanted to sit up in the alcove up there and kind of relive the romance of the movie and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, this is television, Michelle. I mean,
this is radio.
Anyway, so he planted those figs at San Diego Mission, and these first figs were, of course, not the best, as we all know. And after much tweaking of the cultivation methods in the early 20th century, I guess, the California fig crop began to take off. And now, even though Louisiana produces the best, most juicy, delicious, the most sought after, the most wonderful figs in the world, California produces all of the country's dried figs. And you know
what? See, that's because we eat all of them.
Yeah, they dry the figs for our fruitcakes at Christmas. That's why California is even involved in figs, Michelle. It's get the Cajuns their fruitcake of figs. Anyway, y'all, we're going to talk about Turkey and Greece and Portugal and Spain and all of that kind of stuff. But now we have a great guest, and Michelle, I need to go see him right away. I got an urge because I heard about the varieties of fig trees he has. Mm-hmm.
Well, I know.
I'm miserable right now in my seat.
Well, you're going to be heading that way. You're going to be going up to Natchitoches not too long. Maybe you can take a little detour.
Well, yeah, but not, that's another story. Anyway.
Today we have Dalton Durio of Durio Nursery in Opelousas, Louisiana with us. You know, he's a good rice and gravy man. That's rice and gravy and fig country.
You have fig for sure.
Dalton is a graduate of the University of Southwestern Louisiana.
That's where the good-looking girls go to school.
And the good-looking men, I might add.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see you hadn't noticed that. But anyway, he earned his degree in horticulture and later attended grad school at Texas A&M. He works for Yankee Clipper Landscaping in Alexandria while continuing to run the nursery that his father established. He owes his love of plants to his dad, who was a landscape architect from LSU. His dad started Durio Nursery when he couldn't locate the plants he had worked with in college and eventually amassed a collection of, are you sitting down? You sitting down, John Paul?
I know. I read all about it. 85. Oh, my
Over God. 85 different fig cultivars.
And I thought I had something.
Now, Dalton has expanded on that and now grows over 100. He will tell you that fig fanatics, not unlike yourself, are his biggest customers, and so many of those are located on the East Coast, where fresh figs are considered a luxury item. And figs definitely are a sweet luxury, and fortunately for us, we can grow them right in our own backyards. Dalton, it is great to have you with us today. Welcome to Stirring It Up.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be with y'all.
And Dalton, I want to tell you, I'm probably going to be a nuisance around you in the next. I'll let the fig season go by first, and then I'll come be a nuisance. Because
Dalton, no, you don't know it, but you have a new best friend today.
Come on,
that's awesome.
Michelle.
I'm just telling him so he can know.
Dalton, I only have about 35 or 40 fig trees. And I, like so many people, always want to do what we shouldn't do, and that is get involved with fig varieties other than the ones that grow really well. You know, we want to pick figs that we got to work really hard on, but I know that you can tell me how to stay within the rows, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll try.
Yeah, good luck, Dalton. I hadn't been able to keep him between the rows.
Well, you know, I got my Thomas Jefferson trees in, the Marseille. I got those in, and they look like they're doing pretty good. I don't know if Dalton's going to tell me those are going to die. Dalton, is the Marseille tree going to do well?
You should be able to grow any fig here. That's not a problem. Growing them is not a problem at all. Some of them won't produce fruit here. Now, Marseille does, but there are some varieties, like some of the ones from California, won't even bear fruit in Louisiana because we don't have the wasps to pollinate them. Some need pollination, some don't.
Did you say wasps?
Wasps.
The wasp that actually crawls inside the fruit is going to freak some of y'all out. Brings pollen just like bees bring it to regular flowers. The fig is actually a flower, and it pollinates some of them that need pollination, and those you have to have the wasps to do.
But Dalton, what pollinates the figs here if it's wasps there? What pollinates the pollen?
Most figs, all the ones in Louisiana that we eat, do not need pollination. You're actually eating a flower, and if that flower will take care of itself and it'll stay on the plant long enough to mature and turn into a fruit, I mean, it's a combination. It goes from one to the other. And if it doesn't need the pollination, it hangs on the tree and you can eat it. But there's some varieties that out of the 100 that I grow that need pollination. They'll make fruit and then they fall off because they don't get pollinated. So they never mature.
You see, I've already learned something.
Have you eaten fig Newtons?
Yep.
And tasted the little gritty thing inside of them?
Is that a wasp?
No. That's the seeds of the pollinated fruit. You'll never taste that in a fig grown in Louisiana because we don't get pollinated. Unless, of course, you get somebody like Dr. O'Rourke at LSU to hand pollinate them.
Yeah, right. But Dalton, kind of jumping back to the beginning, it sounds like your father was absolutely an amazing guy, a pioneer, certainly of sorts, in the mail order business, shipping unique plants to countries, Japan, South Africa, Russia. And then it seems that you've kind of picked it up, and you're obviously shipping plants or trees all over the country yourself. Tell us a little bit about the origin and how you've picked it up. Kind of bring us to the business that you're in.
You mentioned my daddy graduated from LSU, and him and my mother started the nursery in 1950 and then had 10 children.
Wow.
And you have to feed all those kids. Well, he tried doing landscaping, and that was working good, but then he couldn't find the plants he wanted to use, so he started growing them. And then he got more and more involved in growing plants and collecting plants, and the landscaping went by the wayside. It was really more of a passion than a business. The man simply loved plants. And, of course, all 10 of us couldn't help but, inherit that from him. Not all of us in the nursery business anymore, but we all grow plants, and I stayed with him until the end and worked with him, and it seemed like the natural thing to keep doing.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm doing now is, he's passed away, I'm going to establish a garden in his honor, planting the plants that he collected at the old nursery property.
Wow, that's awesome. That's a great, great memorial to him. The countries that he shipped to, do you still do that? Japan?
Not as many, because like I said, when he was running the nursery, we had 10 children doing automatic workers. I can't get good workers. So it's basically what I can do by myself. I have 3 sons, and they help me a little bit, but yeah, we still ship some stuff overseas, but it's more complicated than it used to be and more costly, too.
Right. And then when I saw that you were you mentioned shipping trees, a lot of trees to the East Coast, I was thinking about the cold weather up there. I was thinking about the fig being a great southern crop. So they manage it through the snow and ice and all of that?
You wouldn't believe the stories I hear from up there. Those people really, you think we're fig nuts? They're really fig nuts up there. They'll hire or rent backhoes, dig trenches in the ground, bury their trees over the winter so they won't freeze, and dig them up in the spring and fertilize them and let them grow and produce figs. And, you know, their growing season isn't nearly as long as ours, so they really putting in a lot of effort for very little reward.
Right, right. I have a friend of mine in Toronto that actually took a Celeste fig tree from here, put a little cutting in his suitcase, and flew mm-hmm. back to Toronto, yeah. John Arena.
Yeah, I know, and, exactly. And you just exposed his...
Well, yeah.
His lawbreaking.
His lawbreaking. But anyway, he planted it in a 3-gallon pot, then he planted it in a 4-gallon pot, then he planted it in a 5-gallon pot, and every year he brings it inside the house. And he moved twice to save the fig tree.
He's moved twice
to save the fig tree. I'm not kidding you. This guy, thank God he's a multi-millionaire because he can buy these apartments with high ceilings. Dalton, he told me, this is John Arena, one of the most famous restaurateurs and chefs of Canada. He's from Italy and discovered Louisiana figs visiting me here. And it brought him back to Calabria, Italy, where the black Italian figs were just on the table every morning for breakfast with fresh cream. And he started to say, oh, my God, I've forgotten about my figs. And he said, can I take a cutting back with me? And this was like, I don't know, 15 years ago or so. So he took this cutting of Celeste back to Canada. And he literally, I'm not kidding you, has moved twice to save the tree. That's the passion. That's the passion of fig growers. Now, LSU has been such a valuable contributor to the, the quality of the production of fruits and vegetables. But, you know, I'm sure your father, was he involved with LSU in creating a lot of these?
Not in creating. Dr. O'Rourke did most of the breeding, as far as I know, at LSU. And now, my father did name one of the first ones at LSU didn't really want to release, but got released anyway. He named one Oye. It's an older LSU release, and it's still one of the best ones. The only drawback is it can spoil, but as far as for flavor, it's really hard to beat.
You mean because of the sugar content? Or?
Because, you know, I mentioned the open and closed eyes.
Right.
Those are the closed eye, like Celeste. Usually when we have the rainy weather during fig season, those will usually stay good. But some of them have the end of it where the flower isn't quite open yet, but some of them open up a little bit at the end where the walls can get in and out. If it's too wide of an opening, water gets in there and it makes it sour.
I see it. Now, you know, we think of Celeste, we think of Brown Turkey, we think of, you mentioned O'Rourke, LSU, of course, has their gold, their tiger stripe, all of that. But when you think of some of the best tasting, a good growing fig trees that we might not know about, what would be your top one or two in that category?
Well, you know, Celeste is hard to beat.
Yeah, it really is, and for cooking as well. I mean, that's a great cooking fig.
Now, what LSU and others have done is they've bred figs that produce over a longer period of time, because Celeste, it's all and done. It's over with in like 2 weeks you finish.
Right, exactly.
But something like LSU Purple will bear several months. Now, it's not a whole bunch at any one time, but you get an extended season. But as far as the flavor, I'd have to say that one of their favorites was Sal's. It's one from a nursery up in New York that's now no longer in existence, but they called one Sal's Carleone fig. It was a real good dark black fig, not real big, by the same size as Celeste, but real sweet. Another one they liked was Brown Greek, which is apparently an unnamed fig that came from Greece that my father had got somewhere down the line. Large fig, real good flavor to it. And, you know, the ones from LSU are also real good, especially the one they call Golden Celeste or Champagne.
Right, Champagne. I have those.
That's probably one of my favorite ones from LSU.
Yeah, I think I have about 4 Champagne trees, but this is the first year I'm growing them. I just put in a new fig orchard. I had about, I don't know, maybe about 30 trees. I just plant them in rows of 4 about 20 feet apart, and then I plant 4 in of one variety, then I move next door for another variety, and next door for another variety. And this year I took them all out, and I got Dr. Johnson to come out and work with me at LSU, and we cleared out a whole new, just about a half acre or so, and put in, I think it was 24 new trees in that same pattern. And boy, I tell you, they're really doing beautiful. I mean, they're doing really, really, really doing great. And that's at my white oak plantation. I do have a one, Michelle's grandmother. And Michelle, I don't know where she got those trees from, but she had
from my great grandmother's backyard.
And they came from Italy.
That's the family story.
Well, they had to because these large black figs. Now, these large black figs, now, you know, they call them Italian black. I don't have any idea what they are. You know, what am I talking about, Dalton? Do you know what these big, large black figs?
There are so many figs out there that I don't think anybody knows what all of them are.
See, well, just so you know, Dalton, you're going to be making a house call. I don't know if you do that, but you're going to be making a fig house call. I'm just
I'd warning. Be happy to.
Just warning you.
I just wanted to look at the fig tree because this is the first year, Dalton, when her grandmother died, she started crying, not so much for her grandmother, but the fig tree.
Oh, that's not true.
So I went over to her grandmother's house, and there these little ones growing underneath. So I dug them up, and I planted three or four of these trees. And, of course, I never had a fig on those trees since I planted them, which is, I don't know, how many years.
12 years.
Okay, I've never had a fig on those trees for 12 years.
Wow.
Well, this year I put a chainsaw to them,
Well,
hold on, give me a break here. I cut them down to my chest height because they were growing all over the place. They're full of figs this year. full of figs. And I said, if this tree doesn't, I told the tree, if I'm cutting you in half, and if this year you don't do something, the rest of you are coming out. It's full of figs.
You were following that biblical story, weren't you? Yeah. About the fig tree, if it didn't produce.
That's right. That God said, get rid of it. Anyway, Dalton, do you sell trees?
Yes, sir, I do.
And how many, if somebody walked into your shop in Opelousas and had an inkling to buy trees, how many opportunities do they have in varieties?
In figs?
Yeah, in figs. What?
It depends on the time of year, because in the spring when I'm full, I have close to like almost 100 varieties.
Wow.
But as I sell out, because, again, being a small-time operator, I can only produce so many of each one, and some of them, one guy will buy all of one kind sometimes. And, when I run out, I'm out for that year, and then I'll have to produce some more the next year. And you never know from year to year which one is going to be the hot fig. Sometimes one will taste, you'll say this is the best one this year, and then the next year it's not. It just depends on the climate, you know, the temperatures, the moisture, everything can change the way a fig tastes.
What's the best time of year to plant a fig tree?
In the fall.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so Dalton, this fall, so you have now in pots all of the varieties that you're going to have ready to sell in the fall. Is that what it is?
Yes, sir. That's right.
So if I tell you right now that I'm coming over there to get four varieties of figs, just four. Now, I already have Celeste, already have Brown Turkey, already have Marseille, already have LSU Gold, already have the Purple, already have the Auroric, already have the Tiger.
Why don't you tell him what you don't have?
Well, I don't know what I don't have. I only know what I have. That he knows what I don't have.
Yeah.
So, what four are you going to sell me? Four trees of each. Well, what are they right now? I'm going to write them down. What about this sows? This sows.
Unfortunately, I'm out of sows because I push it. You know, I push the ones that are the best. I sell out of those first.
So when can I get on the list for sows?
Well, you can get on the list now, but I won't have them until next year.
Okay, that's right. You put me down for next year. I will be here next year if the good Lord says the same. Now, what about the brown Greek? I do have champagne, too, but I only have one. Can I get four champagne from you, too?
I'll have to check and see how many I have left.
Okay, well, you save some champagne for me.
You see, late. You come into the table late.
Yeah, but it's only July.
Well, I know.
Right, but despite when is the best time to plant, doesn't mean that's when people are going to buy it.
You see that? You're throwing way too much technical in here.
No, it's not. It's just a fact of life. People, when they want something, they want it. They don't care if it's the best time.
Believe me, I know exactly what you're talking about. And somebody's more, can you imagine somebody beat me to the absurd? Nobody can beat me to the...
Try another one.
Okay,
what about Olye?
No, he's going to get the sales from me next year.
Yep.
He's telling me I have to take a break. Dalton, you cannot go anywhere. We're not finished this yet.
All right.
He's got to finish his order when we get back.
Well, I want people to know that this is the man here.
I know. Okay? I know.
Y'all, don't go anywhere. Dalton and I are going to finish our order in a minute, and we're going to tell you everything about how to get in touch with him and all of that, so you don't want to miss that. We'll be back in a minute.
The animals meet at the fig tree shrine, sharing stories, having laughs, and drinking their sassafras. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-
turtle, the polywog, and the giraffe. We sit and eat the big fig tree.
What's happening musically in Dakar? Joburg, Kinshasa, Port Spain, Havana, Accra, Dar es Salaam, Cairo, Paris, New York. Well, tune in this week and every week to find out on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi everyone, this is Pat Mitchell-Worley, host of Bill Street Caravan. Join me each week for live performances from blues clubs and festivals around the world. We'll also have feature host segments that give you the stories behind the music. That's Bill Street Caravan, Saturday nights at 11 p.m. here on KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Comics avec Val. Bienvenue dans le monde francophone. C'est tous les jeudis à 9h sur KRVS, la radio Acadie.
Explore the wide range of musics from throughout the world every week here on Earthbeat. I'm Cecil Doyle, bringing you classics, field recordings, and the latest sounds spanning the globe. That's Earthbeat, Sunday nights at 7 p.m., Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. here on KRVS.
Welcome back to Stirring It Up. Slama, I like that fig tree song, All Animals Getting Under the Fig Tree. That was pretty good.
A little jazz.
Yeah, of course, this little sound from the Casbah that you were just playing there in Morocco or whatever that was. That kind of threw me off. Yeah, I've been there. But
I'm helping you out here.
What's that?
I went to Dalton's website.
Right.
I've got a list of his figs. So,
man, this is very nice.
Yeah, you ought to see all the other stuff he has.
Man, he's got the Alma. He's got the Barnasotto. He's got the Beal. He's got the Black Celeste, the Black Jack.
Mm-hmm. Oh. And it goes on and on.
Anyway, y'all, we do have Dalton on the phone with us.
That's it, Dalton Doria. We hadn't scared him off.
So, Dalton, so you're going to try to get me at least four of those solitary. I'm putting my order. This is legitimate. I'm coming. When you tell me they're ready, now you're going to see if you got a couple of champagne, because I only have one, I think, of the champagne.
Okay. Yeah, you need more than one.
Yeah, so I need, if you can get me another three, then I'll complete my row, you see. So if you can get me that. And then I need four beautiful black figs. What am I going to put in that row?
Now, Papa John is a good one. That Barcenote is another good one.
Tell me about that Barcenote. That sounds good.
It's a good dark purple. They say black, but it's dark purple. It has a good red flesh on the inside. It's not a real big one, but it's, small to medium size. But the flavor is the key. I don't care how big a fig is, but it doesn't taste good.
Now, you see, at the restaurant, I like to take some of the larger blacks and split them in half and put a little goat cheese and prosciutto in the middle of them and then put them under the broiler for a minute and warm them up and let the cheese kind of melt in the middle. So what kind of fig would I have black that would be? Because, I do want that one right there. You just mentioned that I want to make sure I put my order in for those four with the red inside black. I think I know that fig. And I know it is sweet. So you have any of those?
Yes.
You see that? Okay, I've got four of those coming right there, okay? So what of the large black, which one should I get?
Well, Black Mission is a good one. The only problem is it doesn't produce a whole lot of figs here. Nero is another good one you could go with.
I like Nero. That sounds good. Because I like my garden to have good names, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, just getting back to your business, what's the greatest challenge, actually, that you have in the business that you're in?
Right now, probably weeds. Yeah. Keeping the weeds out.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Absolutely. What about
and watering?
What about watering? I think when you're planting fig trees, one of the biggest challenges people have is knowing how much to water, how much not to water. They can kill a fig tree with too much water.
Yeah, that'd be hard-pressed to do that. I mean, unless it's in standing water, especially when they're bearing fruit. Now, the key is, if you do water a fig tree when it's barren, is not to wet the fruit.
Right. Now, is it best just not to water them during bearing?
No, no. You want to make sure they get plenty of water. You know, that if they dry out, they'll drop the fruit. That's why people have a lot of problem with Celeste. It drops fruit because they're fluctuating in water. When a plant is stressed, the first thing to do is abandon the fruit.
Right. Mm. Now, let's just say you have like a four-week period in July and August with no rain, and the trees, let's say, have fruit on them. Are you expected to water those every day?
At least once a week, you want to get at least an inch of water on plants that you want to keep alive during the summer.
An inch of water once a week?
Yes. The equivalent to an inch of rain.
Yeah, right.
What I typically do on a tree is I leave the holes just trickling overnight once a week on them. Get a good soaking water. You know, you don't want to wet all the foliage or the fruit with the water. You just want to wet the roots, get them good and wet.
Okay.
And let it dry out the other 4 or 5 days.
Right. I have drip irrigation at the roots of each one of my trees.
Well, you got the best you can get.
And they're on a timer, so I can actually set every tree has its own drip, and every tree is on a timer, and it's all from a central system. So
if you have an automatic system, that's different. I'm talking about the old-fashioned manual way.
He's talking about for me. He's talking about for me, who forgets to water anyway, to do it. Just turn on the water one night, and I'm good for the next week.
Just barely dripping on it, just like the drip irrigation, but you have to go do it yourself.
Yeah, right. The way we used to do it at home with the hose, just like he says, we call it the hose pipe. We don't call it the hose, right? So anyway, well, look, I think I'm in good shape. You're going to try to find me four sows next year.
Yes, sir.
You're going to try to find me three champagne this year. You're going to try to find me four of the Nero.
Yep.
Then do you have Marseille?
Yes.
Okay, I need three of those.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to do three Marseille, and that's all I need. Then that's going to add me four. They're going to finish my four more rolls, and then I'm going to have like a beautiful arch.
I got a question. What you going to do with all these figs?
I'm going to give them to friends like you.
Oh, well.
I'm like.
Let's get that order in then.
Well, Dalton, one other thing. I mean, really, in reality, people who love to grow, like your dad, and then obviously you've taken over the business, at the end of the day, it's more about the garden, it's more about the trees, it's more about cultivating, it's more about the pride of owning them and keeping them beautiful and people coming to see them. It's as much about that, if not more, than the fruit itself, I think, to people who love horticulture, right?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Because I find that I love to go out. And when I see my orchard is at White Oak Plantation. So at White Oak, we have fruit trees. We have a lot of different trees, but we certainly have a beautiful fig orchard. You know, I have wedding receptions. I have parties, functions, corporate events. It's amazing how you'll see 50 people walk into all the fig trees looking at the names of them, you know, just because they're all in their own little cages, etc. And they all have signs on them what they are. And people would rather go walk out in the garden and look at the fig trees. They'd rather do that than listen to the speaker in the ballroom, you know what I mean? But anyway, so you say you have three children. Any of them look like they're going to stay in this business, or they've all moved on to do something else?
No, but I started late. Mine are young. I have the oldest one's just 15 or 16, I have to check. The middle one seems to be the most interested in plants out of the three I have. The youngest one is just 9. He don't care about anything but video games.
Well, look, one thing I'll leave you with, we are going to put all of Dalton's information on the website. Are you open to the public? I mean, can people...
Just on Saturdays.
Just on Saturdays. So you are open. And at what time are you open on Saturday?
Right now, 8 to 6.
8 to 6. And are you right on the outskirts of Opelousas or in the city?
Just south of Opelousas, going towards, if you know where Sunset is, or going towards Lafayette, either.
Gee, all right.
Okay. Highway 182, huh?
That's correct. The old highway.
Okay, I got it. And you're there most Saturdays?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Michelle, that's a road trip.
I know. We're going to be meeting you soon, Dalton.
All right.
You're going to see it. Look, we appreciate it so much. I think because of what you just told me, the Sahls, the Champagne, the Nero, I think you better start planting some of those, because I think everybody's going to come and say, I heard you on John Fultz, and he said that was the best tree that I want four of. So I would suggest you start planting those.
Yes, sir. We'll do it.
Hey, you're a good man. Thanks for spending time with us and for putting up with our mess this morning, Dalton. We really appreciate what you do, and we appreciate the great work that you do to keep figs alive for all of us who are aficionados. So thanks so much. And all of your information will be on the website, so no one needs to worry about how to get in touch with the nursery. We'll have it there. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, you're very welcome. I enjoyed it.
Good. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, he was a great guy, huh?
He is. Huh? Absolutely.
So anyway, Michelle, what about, now we've been talking about figs, what about books on the subject of figs? Y'all, I try to inspire you each week to make sure you put the books, the subject on your listen to this, go to our website, look at the books we tell you, and add them to your library, because if you listen to the show, you can build a beautiful library on all the subjects we talk about. So what are you recommending today?
Well, today, since we are in Fig Heaven, I am recommending a book by the same name, Fig Heaven. 70 Recipes for the World's Most Luscious Fruit. It was written by Marie Simmons. Marie is a former editor of Cuisine Magazine and one of our favorite authors. In Fig Heaven, she talks about the many different varieties from around the world and why they have been so prized through the ages. She gives us a really nice education on how figs are pollinated and cultivated. And considering that the season for fresh figs is so short, she also includes recipes that use dried figs as well as fresh so that you can enjoy their flavor all year long. And here's a bonus. There's a recipe in there for making your very own homemade Fig Newtons.
All right.
Whoa.
Which I know you love. So.
I love Fig Newtons. You had some in the car the other day when we were traveling.
I know. You really liked them, too.
I know. They were good. I love
Fig Newtons. They're a nutritious treat, you know, nutritious and
it was
and
funny
fast.
That he said about the little seeds inside the Fig Newton, that's coming from California figs that's pollinated by wasps, because we don't have those seeds. Yeah, we don't have those seeds in Louisiana figs. So. And what else you have?
So the next book that I have is called Figs, A Global History by David Sutton. This book is another great one of the books in the Global History series that tells the tales of your favorite foods. So the author here discusses the origins and biology of this ancient plant and considers that it's not a fruit but an ingrown flower. He places the fig in its historical and religious context, which takes us back to the Garden of Eden, and presents the possibility that the forbidden fruit was actually a fig and not an apple. Fascinating little book, chock full of interesting and fun facts, and most importantly, great recipes for your Louisiana figs.
All right, those are great, and we have those in the library, and that's one. And I love figs. I mean, we cut up with Dalton a lot, but I mean, look, nobody loves figs more than I do. And as a young boy, I was fortunate to be allergic to the milk of the figs, so I didn't have to pick them. I only needed to eat them.
Were you really allergic, or
well, every time I'd get near a fig tree, I'd start to itch, and I'd have to scratch really bad. And my mother said, don't let Johnny get by the fig tree because he's allergic. But what she didn't know was anytime I got around any work, I itched. Like your papa said, let's go hold the garden and pick grass. I started to itch.
Is that right?
Yeah. So my mare was, she took care of it, by saying he's allergic. Slama, you know what I'm talking about,
yeah,
right?
I hear you. Allergic to work, yeah.
What about our Facebook page over there? Anything happening?
Yeah, nobody should be allergic to social media because we're out there. We're on the web at facebook.com/stirringitupradio, and that's with two R's and no G. And that's our social media platform. You come on out, have a conversation or two. We're posting pictures all the time. Feel free to post pictures of what you're cooking. We're always looking to engage in that conversation. Also, we're always asking our sow hounds to let us know what they'd like to hear on the airwaves. So if you got a great idea.
Or maybe what not to hear.
Would you not?
Maybe what they don't want to hear.
We get a lot
just
of
saying.
Look how many fans have told us just over the last week as we've been on the road about how much they love the show and listen to us and all that. We're shocked when we hear that people love the show.
I know.
Huh? We're shocked, Slam. I mean, it's like, what are you
all
kidding?
All day long.
Well, and I guess it's because, we're sitting within these walls. We just see each other. It's almost like we're just having a conversation amongst ourselves. And I'm sure our listeners realize this by some of the things that come hurling out of your mouth.
Well, this is the kitchen table. That's why I call this the kitchen table. Anyway, y'all, also, I want to give you a recipe because I promised you on that for figs. If you have figs and you don't quite know what to do with them, I'm going to put on the site Mamère Zarang's beautiful fig preserve. I'm telling you that this is only four ingredients. It's got sugar, water, and lemon slices with the figs is the fourth ingredient. And you can do 2 quarts or 4 pints of figs with this recipe. Just absolutely fantastic. And it is, I think, one of the best. Michelle, your mom makes a recipe that's almost identical to it. It's great. That's why I love it so much. I'm going to give you a recipe now, though, for medallions of pork and in fig glaze.
Oh,
now, of course,
you
can use beef. You can put it on pork chops. It doesn't matter. But this is for the little pork medallions you buy in the store because they're so easy to cook. And I think it's quite natural, the sweetness with pork here, because a lot of times apple and all that is done with pork. Just go to the store and get some of those pork tenderloins. You know what they are. And then you can take them. There's a silver skin on the outside. I take a paring knife and kind of just take that off. It's just a little, it's just kind of tough and chewy if you leave it on. So, and the pork tenderloins are only about 1.5 to 2 inches in diameter. So I would cut them into 12 medallions. Everybody gets about, let's say, 2 or 3 of them. So if you're serving 6 people, you'd cut 12 medallions.
You just use pork chops?
You can use pork chops too, sure. I use 1/2 cup of the fig preserves. I put about 1/4 cup of vegetable oil in the skillet and get things smoking hot in there. Then I take the pork medallions and all the pork chops, and I dust them in a little seasoned flour, a little salt, pepper, granulated garlic. I season the meat really good with salt, pepper, granulated garlic as well. And then into the hot pan, and I brown them nicely just for a minute because they cook really fast, especially the pork medallions. You want to cook them medium anyway. Mm-hmm. They cook in about 5 minutes. I take them out once they brown on all sides. Then I add 1/2 cup of sliced green onions, 1/2 cup of sliced mushrooms, about 1 ounce of port wine can go into it. I throw in 1/2 cup of fig preserves at that point. And then in the stores today, you can buy some of this, the veal stocks, the veal, you know, companies like Knorr and these companies with that have the brown sauces, the brown gravies. I like the brown that has demi-glace written on it, demi-glace, G-L-A-C-E. But just get brown gravy as well. Mix it with a cup of water if you're getting the powdered product or whatever. They also make the concentrated product of demi-glace in most of the stores today. You mix that with a cup of water and you throw it in with the wine and the mushrooms, the garlic, the green onions, the parsley, all of that wonderful stuff, and let that cook and reduce. Season that sauce beautifully. The figs are going to sweeten it up with the port wine. It's going to be just magnificent. And then you lay the tenderloin back in it and just warm it all back up beautifully. And if it's pork chops, you would throw it in the oven at 350 degrees for about, I don't know, 30-40 minutes. It won't take you that long if they're thin cut. I like the little thin cut pork chops anyway. I don't like those big thick ones unless you're going to stuff them. 350 degrees for about 45 minutes is going to be beautiful. Anyway, y'all, we're going to put all of these recipes, my mass fig preserve. I'm going to put a fig cake recipe too, the gâteau de fig, on the website as well as the medallions of pork and fig glaze. Y'all, thank you so much for being with us, and go pick some figs and cook them, or just eat them with a little cream, or just have somebody feed them to you. We're going to see you next week.
Our music on the Thistle and Shamrock transcends boundaries, expands horizons, celebrates tradition, stimulates innovation. It's music to bring people together, so why don't you join us?
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
Tune in to the Diamond Sea every Saturday night at midnight for a mixtape of classic and contemporary independent music here on listener-supported 88.7 FM KRVS, public radio for Acadiana.
Hi, this is Nick Forster. Every week in E-Town, we bring together musicians from a wide range of styles for some great live performances and conversation. And we also present the Achievement Award to someone doing outstanding work in their communities. It's an hour of uplifting stories and music each week on E-Town.
Tuesday at noon on KRVS.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, online at KRVS.com.